I call this meeting to order. Hopefully everybody got the very not-so-tree friendly packet that Mike sent out on Friday. A little paper heavy.
Monday.
Oh, it's on Monday? Okay, it's Monday.
One on Friday.
So we're just going to start with routine business. So is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I shall move. Second.
It's been approved and seconded. Any discussion on the minutes? I would not have any discussion. I thought Jonathan, you did a good job capturing everything. I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Minutes are approved. Moving down to the next line of business, which are, we have a lot of loans, Rich, it looks like.
I looked through them, and they're quite exciting. There's 20 of them for about $9 million. So I'll move adoption of approval of these 20 loans.
Great. I second that. Rich, do you want to maybe walk us?
Sure. There's a number of them I'd like to talk a little bit about. Number one. That is a rail spur that's being built by the city of Marshfield for a project that 300 square foot project by the Packaging Corporation of America in their industrial park, expected to employ 8,200 people.
What one is
the stand
for?
Number one.
Oh, great.
So that's pretty exciting.
How many people are supposed to
employ? 8,200.
Sure.
Now, whether that happens right away or it takes a while for that plan to get going,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure it does. Number four, Sun Prairie is providing, they're doing some demo. They bought a property and they have to demo and then grade for a municipal parking lot downtown. Number eight, Sheboygan Falls. That is a pass-through loan to a developer of affordable senior housing. They are renovating the old middle school into senior apartments, and this is a pass-through loan from the city to the developer. To provide a piece of that capital stack for that project.
We're not allowed to loan money to the developer.
Right.
So this is a sneaky way to do that, but it's all legal, I assume.
Yeah, it's quite common for us to lend money to the municipality, and then they will re-lend that same money to the developer. Now, what the city expects is the developer to pay them back, and then the city will forward that money to us. Now, we always have the city on the hook, though. It's a general obligation loan, and so they have to pass a tax levy to pay us back, but they expect that to be reimbursed by the developer.
Thank you.
On the next page, Fox Lake. These are a couple of loans. They were development incentives and infrastructure to pay off a line of credit for their regional development authority, residential development authority, for the Spring and Booth Street apartments in Fox Lake. 13 through 16 are the village of Tony, which is a very small community near Ladysmith, 100 people about in this entire village. They ran into a little bit of trouble because they needed to borrow money for road and some other projects that they had, but they didn't have the capacity anymore because they had, originally they had a water utility that borrowed money from the Rural Development, which is a federal program, which is a revenue-based loan. When interest rates fell, they redeveloped or refinanced that revenue-based loan with a general obligation loan through a local bank, but they used up most of their debt capacity. So they didn't have any remaining capacity to do these other projects. We stepped in, refinanced that bank, or intend to refinance that bank loan with a combination of a revenue loan and a general obligation loan to give them the capacity to do permanent . So we stepped up on that one. That actually has been in the works for almost a year. It's a complicated transaction. It's a small village, and I think that we're doing a good job there.
I think you say probably other factors.
Other than that, the other ones are
sorry, just a question about Tony. They're not going over their debt limit, are they?
Actually, what we're doing is we're bringing them back lower than their debt limit.
Right.
Because what they had done is they had taken a revenue loan,
refinanced
it at a local bank, and put it on their general obligation debt money. So they went from a very low point to a very high point, and we refinanced it back onto a revenue
loan. Put it back on the other balance.
Right. So this is an example for some banks.
Yeah.
Either they'll take it through or not, they'll
Yep. Right.
They took away their flexibility for other projects.
Yeah.
I have a question about the Tony model. So the amount of loan is not huge compared to many other loans, but it's a very small community. And I assume the due diligence process indicated that we're comfortable that there will be, that they've got the capacity to meet the obligations of the loan.
Yes. For the water utility loan, that's a revenue loan, and we took a look at the revenue stream that had been provided by the water utility over the last number of years. We also have the backstop of state aid. And so if they do not, if they fail to make a payment, we can always intercept their state aid or require to intercept their state aid. Now, that has never happened in the history of this program, which started in 1871, but it's a pretty good incentive for them to continue making their payments. But yes, we did some underwriting on that revenue stream, and we are satisfied that it's sufficient to meet the needs of the loan.
And the very last one's a big one. So Brown County must be doing quite a project up there.
Yeah, that's actually outside of Green Bay, and it's a very growing community. They're a good customer of ours, and they have some infrastructure that they can finance.
Okay, good.
They didn't get into detail what they're doing, did they?
You know, I probably have that, but I don't, off the top of my head, I don't.
I vote aye.
You vote aye. All right. Any, all those in favor of approving loans?
Aye.
Loans are approved. Was this our largest chunk of loans yet?
It's the largest number in quite a while. You know, I think my record, I've been here a little over 9 years. My record is almost 30 loans for one year. And so this is up there, though.
Good. And these are all refining. These are all under the new term, new interest rates.
Except the revenue loan, we're able to get a premium on the rate because of the nature of the risk of the loan.
Okay. All right. Great. So moving into old business, we have the investment policy. Rich, do you want to maybe kick it off?
Yeah, you know, I sent along with the board packet a description of really what's changed in the policy and the reason for it. You know, the impetus for the revision was threefold. One, you want to do it every once in a while. You know, there's changes in financial market conditions that require a review of asset allocation, strategies, and procedures. And so every 2 years, you really need to go back in and dig into it a little bit. Second thing that happened was that the smoothing funds were built. The prior policy, or the approved policy, has a long description of what happens before the smoothing funds get filled, and that was no longer necessary. So that was. The third thing that happened was that we were shifted from program revenue in this budget to DPR, and that changes the way that, especially for the normal school fund, that we can allocate those assets because we do not have to generate the steady income to pay for each. So it allows us some flexibility in that regard. So I made the document remains pretty much as originally as approved. There's minor rewording, reorganization, and clarification made throughout the document, but there's three areas that really required some significant changes. One was the language regarding the smoothing fund and the annual distributions. Second was the common school fund investment objective and asset allocation. And third was the allocation for the normal school fund. Now, we can go over the changes in those allocations if you would like to. Would you like to hear some more detail about that?
I read through it, and it's somewhat complicated language sometimes.
The financial is all set of words.
It all seems fine to me.
Okay. So that was the reason for the changes and the major areas of change within the policy. We also made a few changes to the investment philosophy. And one is that we would make reasonable efforts to invest in the state of Wisconsin as long as it was within our fiduciary guidelines. And two, there was a sentence added regarding transparency and that we would strive to become as transparent as we could.
Thank you. So I sent a memo to the board on Friday. Because we have, the investment committee has done a lot of work on this policy, and there is no doubt about it, this is definitely a complicated issue, and I think we want to make sure that we get it right. But with that being said, there are just a few areas that I will be honest, I just don't think it's ready for approval today. And I want to make sure that we're really clear in understanding these areas before we move forward. And so the areas that I kind of highlighted are really four specific things. One, for example, is the audience. We put a lot of detail in some areas. We don't put enough detail, I think, in others. If you look at example for the Wisconsin Trust Fund for the university, their investment policy is 15 pages long. Ours is 42. And really, in my experience, these investment policies have been for the investment committee, for the investment management team, and for their fiduciaries. And so we want to make sure we explain those things. And so that goes into then the kind of bottom three. So the second one is governance. We talk about roles and responsibilities generically, but not necessarily how it relates to investments. So areas, for example, about how do we evaluate? Who makes recommendations? How exactly does the investment committee work? How do we think through, I think, a little bit better, a conflict of interest? And so these are areas that I think are really important that we outline in governance that I don't think we get to that level that we need to. The third piece is fiduciary responsibility. So I included in this packet, I asked for the Legislative Reference Bureau to really clarify under law what our fiduciary responsibilities are under the BCP, for the BCPL. And I think we need to capture more of that language because the legislature is clear on how we can invest this money, and I want to make sure that we uphold what they have kind of structured us to do, and I don't think that's captured at the level that it needs to be in this investment policy per law. And then the last piece is permitted investments. So a lot of times, how these documents were developed, at least when I was in the private sector, and when I did some stuff for the Department of Defense, asset allocation helps then further influence your permitted investments. What worries me about the permitted investment section explicitly in this policy as is that we have listed a laundry list of investments. Some of them are not captured in our asset allocation, and further, the way that they are codified indicates to me not necessarily how they weight within our overall portfolio, and so it's incredibly misleading. So for an example, the State Trust Fund Loan Program is one of our most significant assets that I believe is in our portfolio. We give between $400 million, but yet it's not under our permitted investments. And you would want that captured in your permitted investment.
These are the loans to schools.
Yes. You'd want it under your permitted investments because that's something that we invest. That's something we do.
So you're saying we're making lots of unpermitted investments?
I think it should be listed, for example, under our permitted investments, since currently it's not captured under our permitted investments.
Okay, so I got questions. Go ahead.
So here's kind of, so this is where I laid it out, because I today cannot advocate for this policy, and in my role I would like to be able to feel like I can do that. So I have, here's kind of a recommendation, is we can go back and forth on this all the time, but I also feel like we're at a point where it would be helpful to get some outside input to further, I think, basically build on these areas. And so I have talked to Terry Thome. I don't know if you guys know Carrie. Carrie is a well-respected public investor. She started at SWIB. She formerly was the chief investment officer for WARF, which is a $3 billion fund, and has literally written many investment policies for public money and how to do that as fiduciaries. So Carrie and I have been talking a lot because she's on the same wavelength as I am with some of these concerns. And she said she would be willing to help us work through these to kind of meet these objectives and ensure that we have the best policy possible. And Carrie's well respected in the state. She's well respected in the public investment area. I believe Rich and Tom have worked with her before. And I really do think it would be valuable to bring her in to help us kind of finalize this document.
So what you're saying in summary is that there are four areas within this big document that you think need to be improved, added to, expanded on, et cetera, et cetera. And unless that's done, you will not vote for this document.
That's correct.
What I'd like to do at the moment, and I hope it can be done quickly, is I would like Tom and Barry to respond to you and explain why they agree or don't agree with your proposal to. Because, I mean, without your intervention in this way, I would have voted for this because I trust the staff to have put together a viable document. Maybe not on a scale of 1 to 100, maybe it's not 99, but I thought it was okay. So Tom and Barry, would you please explain why we should or shouldn't revise this thing?
Well, let's start with
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm somewhat surprised that the chair wants to rip this thing open and make changes.
I know Carrie. I think that she's a thoughtful, good investment manager, and if she's got some additional insight, I would have no qualms about her sharing those with us. I've talked with her before. I thought she knows what she's doing. She comes from a slightly different environment. WRF is not BCPL. They are not a state agency. They have a different set of stakeholders and a slightly different environment. But there are some things that are similar, and if she's got some insights, I'm certainly willing to listen.
Well, I understand that, but and that's good. Thank you for that. But you didn't, and maybe this is not, maybe you feel uncomfortable and still say so, but you didn't address the my first part of my main question is, do you think these four areas really need to be dealt with, or are they fine the way they are now? Because you helped put them together.
I'm a fan of continuous improvement, Doug. If someone comes to me and says, hey, Tom, I have a better way of doing it, I keep my ears open. I haven't talked to Carrie yet, so I don't know what ideas she might have.
But you've talked to Sarah, and you've read her document of critique and criticism.
I disagree with the memorandum that came from Ledge Council, or from the Legislative Reference Bureau. Because the fact that I think the person that wrote it did not understand a few things. The person referenced common law aspects that are not common law. They're actually statutory. And she skipped over that. And so if you're going to write this memo and you're going to write about fiduciary duty, you better understand trust law and you better cite it correctly. And I don't think that was done in that memo.
So I have, one question and then one suggestion. The question I have is, is there a, I see that the intention to update this every 2 years, is there a particular deadline by which there's a either a certainly a formal requirement or just an informal reason that we'd want to approve of the updated investment policy by?
I don't think there's a particular deadline, Josh. There are some investments that we'd like to make that we probably appreciate having some of these amendments in place, although we did put a few of those amendments in place as it relates to middle debt issue. Yeah. Our bigger issue right now is getting third parties and outside counsel, especially because debt and some of these decisions we've already made in the investments. I'd like to say one thing.
We need outside counsel.
We need to. We don't have the in-house capacity, like St. Quinn would, to do a full investigation of the legality of the investment we're going to make when we're making a big investment. When we did the loan for the Fox Arena, we were able to use some of the proceeds of the investment to make that analysis. It cost $25,000, but it was worth it. And we did a $35 million loan. To verify that we have to protect our board. And it was huge.
I remember that.
So the only way we can bet on these things is the peers until we get larger is to because these are plumbing and pumps are not there's a few of them right now, and you can't assume it's going to be this kind of workload in the future. We need outside counsel, and that requires the issues, recommendations, and the governor's approval.
At the moment, in our current policy, we don't have the ability to do that, and this revision gives us that ability.
This is separate from that revision. But the question I'm trying to answer is, Josh, is there any time constraint as it relates to making this amendment? There really is.
We don't need this amendment to get outside counsel.
No.
Yeah. So
we need the governor's approval.
So we just need the governor's approval.
So that situation is irrelevant to the question because we can do that without the governor's.
Do we need to adopt these amendments now because of the time crunch? And there is no time crunch. Although there's an answer to his question.
Yeah.
But I'd like to push back on one thing, if I could. I'm sitting in the peanut gallery, so I got this call from Charlie Hill. That is, what's our audience? When we developed this investment plan, we first went to SWIB and asked their advice, and we were told the way to do it was to hire a consultant who spent $1 million. We then went to the business school and met with Mark Reddy and the other one.
Bryce Homer.
And together we developed some of the best traditional Wisconsin idea, this framework. But that wasn't the end of it. We went to our stakeholders, people were getting the beneficiaries. We went to the legislature leadership. We went to administrative leadership. Who am I missing? We went to WARF. We went to SWIFT. We really worked with all of those stakeholders before we drafted this time. And so it wasn't assembled without a great deal of thought. That's all.
And to answer the question I'm asking, do you really think it's necessary to make the changes that the chair is asking us to consider?
Well, I'm not the chair and I'm not the board, so if the board determines that, then that's their prerogative. I'd say that.
Both you and Tom are sort of evading my question, and maybe I better quit asking it. I don't know.
Well, I have a suggestion, which is, and I want to ask about the time constraints first, because it sounds like we don't have any
immediate
time constraints that require us to sort of make a decision immediately. So my suggestion was going to be that we sort of break these down into the four categories and just have a brief discussion about each and maybe about what our next steps might be, if any, in connection with each of those. Because I think the way we might approach governance, for example, how we address that may be different from the way we'd approach legal responsibility. Does that make sense, Sarah and Doug?
I mean, the reason why I was just trying to be, I think, efficient in how we do this, because a lot of this work, I'll be honest, that I was doing, I would consider more staff work. Like, I was really in the weeds, really in on this. And I don't necessarily know if that makes the most amount of sense for us. So my thought in kind of codifying this, Josh, was really to say, here's where I think these four issues are. Here's somebody that I know is well-respected and has public finance experience that can come back and further, like, provide them specifics, because, you know, having to, like, walk through that, it's going to be a pretty long conversation, because I have literally, like, a 10-page document of all my comments, and, like, to go through that, what I tried to do, I think, in this memo to send to you guys ahead of time was just to high-level kind of share what my concerns were at the principal level to be appropriate, and then make this recommendation that we have, I think, a really good resource that we haven't brought in that has done many of these for Wisconsin, and I think she can provide a lot of good support to address this, to continue to move this forward.
You understand that. So we can, A, approve this document. If Josh would vote yes, I would vote yes. And then we could consider what you're saying as a future amendment to this document. if there are changes which this consultant and our staff agree are really appropriate. I'm not in a position to know whether what you're saying is appropriate. And this woman who you recommended would be fine, and she could work with our staff and come up with recommendations, which we can agree on that. And we could look at those changes and see if we're willing to adopt them. Or B, we could put this on the table and let our staff and this woman work through it and come back with the revised document to pass. Either of those, I think, would work. I guess I'll ask Jonathan, is there any advantage to this first one, namely approving this and then revising it, rather than tabling it and revising it?
Other than right of authorship, no. If the chair wants to work this through, that's fine. And then we'll come to a result.
And you're comfortable working with this woman to see what she actually is proposing?
Well, if you're honest, I think
this is just somebody who's providing volunteer input, essentially, who's got expertise with the...
Josh, I couldn't hear you, sorry.
This is somebody who's providing volunteering to provide input, who's got expertise.
This is someone who said that they would help. I think what that relationship looks like, we can further talk about it, but she's been very helpful.
Do we want to hire her, or is she volunteering to help?
I mean, I think that's part of the question. I think she would do this for, like, a low service or do it for free, but she would definitely be willing to help.
Okay. Well, I don't know what... So, what do you think, Tom? Of my two alternatives, which are pretty obvious.
I would just as soon get the input from Terry and see how much it differs from what we already have. At this point, I don't know how big the difference is.
Okay. Hearing from both you and Jonathan, I would make a motion that we table this and invite this woman to give us advice and to work with our staff and come back with what she thinks are appropriate.
I second that.
So, for discussion purposes, and I don't think this would be contrary to what Doug was saying, I mean, unless somebody were to make a case, I would not want to spend government resources hiring somebody or paying them to consult on this. I do think that if this person's willing to provide just her best input to our team members, that we always want to get, to extent we can get expert thoughts on if there are ways we can improve, that's a good thing. So doing that makes sense. Before I guess we table it, I do think, and I take your point, Sarah, that the goal is not to actually necessarily resolve each of these issues, but rather to sort of give some general thoughts about what if any questions or issues we think are worth following up on. So I think it may be worth briefly discussing that at a high level, at least, so that the staff members have a sense of what we're sort of wondering about. And so I don't know how that vis-a-vis Doug's motion, what the right Robert's Rules of Order step is, but
we're in the stage where we have a motion that's been made and seconded, so now we can have discussion. And as part of the discussion, what you're suggesting, I think it would be appropriate for, I presume it would be Sarah, because this is her proposal, really, and for her to explain to us and to our staff in not a lot of detail, because we don't have all day, but to briefly sort of say why she thinks these things should be done. So Tom and Barry and the rest of the staff can hear that. And I presume she's already talked to the woman.
Carrie.
Yes?
Carrie.
Karen. Carrie already has heard that. So then everybody would be sort of up to speed on what changes need to be considered. And maybe then we will meet again and decide if we agree with those proposals.
Yeah, and Sarah laid that out sort of her explanation for each of these before, as I understood it. But I was inclined to react just briefly to each of those. Is that all right? And then I guess if folks want to, Doug, if you want to add, and obviously I'd be interested in staff members have anything to add, and of course there. On audience, for example, I think it's a good question who the intended readers of this are and what the goal of the investment policy is to convey to whom. And I certainly would be interested in folks' thoughts on that. I don't think we need to discuss that at this meeting, but I think at the next meeting, perhaps, to say, here's our intended audience and here's how we think that this relates to that. Because, for example, if we want somebody to be able to, for example, if we want a legislator to be able to look and briefly get a summary, I think having an executive summary that captures everything very quickly, for example, is a good way to do that, or maybe you have a one-pager that's an addition or, you know, something. But I think at least that's a process that you go into any writing project, just thinking about who your audience is. It may be very simply answered, and it may be that it's all set as is, but I think it's at least worth having that discussion briefly. Governance, it seems to me like at least having a basic explanation of what our governing structure is should be fairly simple, and it makes sense to me to do unless there's a reason not to. I mean, obviously you want to build in appropriate flexibility as necessary, but having something formalized, laying out what the structure is, I'll go through quickly and then I'll...
Well, how about if we're going back and also like chime in, because I'm high level, I didn't get into details, I think, Josh, that you're doing, but I think in addition to governance, it's clarifying, for example, like who's approving, who's recommending. It's looking at the specific roles of the board, the chair, the CIO, like who makes those investment decisions. I think it goes back to looking at like formulating recommendations, like that type of operational governance structure information, not just about general BCPL 101, more directly how governance relates to the management of our investments and kind of our roles, I think, in doing that.
Yeah, I guess the only question I have on that is whether that would be, and you know, that's what I'm hiding here, whether that's something that belongs in the investment policy or if instead that's something external to the investment policy that in some other BCPL document.
Roles and responsibilities for an investment policy is great. Best practice moves with that. Now, again, how it relates to the management of your investments is how it's captured, not that, you know, the executive secretary has all these other responsibilities. It's more their direct roles and how that's related.
Fiduciary responsibility, I'd like to follow up on that and have a clear discussion at our next meeting, I think. It's an important issue, and I think... you know, I think having further discussion on that makes sense. And I don't know that that belongs in the investment policy necessarily. It's sort of a legal principle that's there, whether or not it's in the policy.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'd like to give that one some more thought. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then on permitted investments, I mean, certainly we want to have the language in the policy that describes permitted investments being consistent with the investments we're making, and it might be that there are reasons that some of the incongruities you were mentioning are the way they are, and I'd be interested, I guess, to hear the input from the BCPL team on that as well. And again, I don't, to the extent that those are things we can easily discuss now, I'm happy to do that, or if it makes sense at our next board meeting to sort of do brief follow-ups on those, that's fine with me too. And I don't know if Sarah, Doug, you want to add anything or add additional issues there? But.
So if I can ask Josh, you're saying that we could discuss something now, but wouldn't it make more sense to wait until we get the proposed changes that our staff and this consultant are making and then discuss it in that context?
It's a good question, and I guess partly there are some issues in here where it may be that the BCPL response is permitted investments is written this way for this reason. And if we all hear that, we say, oh, that makes sense. And so there's no sort of further need to do a revision or get further input. We're obviously raising this on the spot, so I don't want to put CCPL staff on the spot here if having a little bit of time to figure out how to respond and make some of those sense. But, and I'm also happy for some of those to be, you know, CCPL staff wants to talk to Sarah offline about some of those things and figure out where there might be follow-up that's appropriate or not. That's sort of my take on that.
So I think, Josh, I'm with Doug, like, let's come back with kind of this, we've talked through, I think, some of these. I think the only one that I'm curious on, if you have any recommendations, is with regards to fiduciary responsibility and kind of further moving forward with that, or if you want to bring that up and think through it and look through that at our next meeting as we carve that out. But that's clearly a legal aspect of this. And so if there are any additional thoughts, I think as we move forward in that section, that would be really helpful. But I think for like audience governance permitted investments, as Doug mentioned, I think if we come back and look at what's recommended to address these, that just to me is the most efficient and I think effective way.
Here's a thought I just had in that context. First, a quick question. How long do you expect this consultant activity to take before we see the revisions?
I don't think it should take that long. I think by the end.
You have a document in January?
Yeah, I think by the end of the year.
For the end of the year, maybe. Yeah. The end of the year is problematic for lots of us because we're going away for Christmas.
So the beginning of the year, Doug, it can be our 2020 first step.
Okay, but then in that context, as the consultant and you and our staff are working together, wouldn't it be appropriate for Josh to be involved if he has the time, or to have an assistant AG who is somewhat expert in this area sitting on those areas in regarding the fiduciary responsibility aspect that you brought up, which is a good one?
Correct. On the fiduciary responsibility, I think it makes sense to follow up at the next meeting. I think Sarah and I were both agreeing that it makes sense to follow up on that topic at the next meeting, and I can provide some further thoughts at that point, and we also want to provide some input on that.
You're
welcome.
It would be good to have that input into the process for this revision, rather than have to do a second look after we get the revision when you want to put your input in.
But I don't think we're going to have anything by the next meeting that's ready, though. So I think that will still give us time if there's changes that need to be made on fiduciary responsibility to include that.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, at the next meeting, you would bring some fiduciary responsibility thoughts,
yes,
and then we would then pass those on to this working group that are revising the thing.
I think we could then discuss what it makes sense to include over the next
step. Yeah. Or if we do a separate document or something.
I take your points just about process. I guess it would be helpful to know before we sort of move forward with potentially revising some of these. On the permitted investment section, for example, I'd be curious to know that Sarah made some points about the terms that she had raised. I'd be curious to know the BCPL staff sort of initial reactions to that or if there are reasons that, you know, that might make sense.
Well, you know, the permitted investments that are included in the policy are not meant to be a comprehensive list. They're meant to provide sideboards for the investment committee and the chief investment officer when making their investment decisions. I do believe that the trust fund loan program is available. You know, one of the permitted investments is loans to municipalities. I don't know that a reorganization of that is going to be helpful. It may. You know, I'd like to hear what Carrie has to say. I've worked with her in the past too, and I think that she should be able to provide some good direction.
Go ahead.
So, I have an amendment to my motion if we're getting ready to deal with that.
I had a couple. I was going to. Did you have more on the permitted investment?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't meant to portray a gauge of the relevant value of each one of those investments. It was just a list that you know, the investment committee to choose from should there be an opening in the asset allocation. Now, I understand that there's some things that are in the permitted investment that are currently not in the asset allocation, but I don't think they perfectly have to correspond to each other. You know, the asset allocation is the recommendation for the actual investment of the funds, and those are taken from the permitted investments, but it doesn't mean that the asset allocation has to include every permitted investment.
Right. Good. And then just quickly, on governance, is there any concern from DCPL staff about adding a governance portion or having to the investment policy?
I don't think so. I think you were right in pointing out that flexibility would be the main concern. You want to provide that governance document in a way that provides the investment committee flexibility in moving forward.
And what are your thoughts on audience?
I think we have a broad audience. You know, I think, like Jonathan mentioned, our audience is, you know, the board, you know, the legislature, the beneficiaries, and the public as a whole. You know, it's meant to provide a history, a description of the funds. And I know that it's a lot broader than most investment policies that you're ever going to see, but we have a long history and a complicated story to tell. And what I was trying to do is provide some background in the way that the investment policy was actually determined. I agree that an executive summary is a really good idea because this is a long and cumbersome document, and I have one, and I think that maybe what I should do is be providing that on a more regular basis.
So it sounds like the idea of discussing whether there are changes that are worthwhile is one that folks think is potentially productive on some of these topics, and then we can sort of revisit those potential changes.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay, well, before we vote, I'd like to put an agenda to my motion, and I feel strongly about this. Is that when we get back from this working group, I'm going to call it a working group, proposed changes, I would like to see them highlighted in italics or bold so we can see not just a brand new document, but how those changes relate to the current document. Does that make sense? Because this is a complicated thing, and the three of us cannot remember everything all the time. So if we get it back so you can see highlighted in italics the proposed revisions versus what's there now, I would like to see it done that way. Is that okay with the two of you?
I think the document is really what are the changes, of course, to this, but also high level, like what were the changes, and why, because I think, I will tell you, this document, I don't know how many times you've read it, is incredibly detailed and complex, and so I think it's also nice to have a summary of what changes were made and why, and I think that's oftentimes the most helpful, is like a summary, not so much like, this bullet is here and that bullet's there, or we removed this section for XYZ. So.
As long as it's clear how we can see what this document
changes that are recommended.
So we can see, and the staff can then, in my case anyway, as a board member, when we have this back, I would turn to Tom, for example, or Rich, and say, okay, what do you think of these changes? And get, so I'm not going to be able to evaluate them completely. I don't have the expertise that they do.
So it sounds like we all agree that if a red line and a summary would be helpful, is that right?
Yeah, a summary, but also identifying the actual changes so we can say, we took out the word shall and put in the word will, to make a silly example.
So, Doug, can you restate your motion? It was to table.
Pardon?
Can you restate your motion?
My motion is to table this document and put together a working group, including this outside consultant who is willing to work free of charge and bring back to us their recommendations as to how to change or alter this current document, including an executive summary that makes it clear what the proposed changes are.
So I think one of the potential points of discussion is, will Carrie do this completely for free? I think it's asking a lawyer to give all this legal advice for free. I think she will do this for us. I don't know if she will do it for us for free, but I think she would do it at an incredibly reasonable rate. I don't think it's necessarily fair for us to ask somebody with that kind of experience to do something for free, because financial guidance is incredibly important. So I just make that quite clear. I have not talked to her about cost or anything like that. She just said she's definitely willing to come.
Well, that makes it more complicated, because then we have to discuss how much we're willing to, when we've got to say, okay, not to exceed X. And I don't know if you want to, get into that. It sounds like you would like us to have a not to exceed X, so that when you're talking to her, you can say, we really appreciate your volunteering to do all this, but do you expect to be compensated? And if she says yes, we say, how much? And then she tells us, and we'll know whether that is within what we're willing to spend.
I mean, we have basically two options, right? I mean, $5,000 is sole source. We can't go over $5,000.
Without the board approval.
Right, or just from like a procurement perspective. Or $25,000 without significant justification. So those are like the two buckets.
And those numbers seem really, really big to me. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not 100% clear that we need to do this. But I'm in agreement that I'm willing to see what the working group has to say. But I'm not sure I'm willing to spend $15,000-$20,000 to do that.
I don't think it will be. I think we can mark it at $5,000.
Josh, how do you feel?
I would want to know a lot more about this before signing off on sending anything on this. For example, I don't know how many people read this, and spending government resources on this unless we know more about it, to me, is something I'd be skeptical of. So if she's willing to consult free of charge, that's certainly something I think makes sense to get somebody's expertise. But I would want to have a clear financial case of what the benefit is for
spending resources. I sort of agree with that, which is why in my motion I said without charge, and I'd like to leave it that way. And you and the consultant can come back to us if you need to and explain to Josh and I why we need to pay her more to do something. We don't know what, but something. And then if that makes sense to us, we can then allocate funds for it. But let's leave it now as to see what she's got to offer free of charge. And that's the motion I made.
So the motion, just to make sure, is the working group will talk to Carrie. We can come back, I think, with a scope of work at the next board meeting.
Scope of work meaning a proposal for
proposal / clarification on it.
So you would not start on the revision?
No, I think we can start, but I guess we got to talk to Carrie and then we'll come back if there's anything.
This is part of the discussion of my motion now, so we're still within level, I think. It strikes me that it would be important to get started with this so that when you come back with your proposed work thing, you'd have some idea how much work it is. Just looking this over superficially, and I did read the whole thing a few days ago. I haven't reread this, and maybe I should have. It strikes me that these changes are not humongous. And I would think that we're talking a few hours of her advice. She's already seen all this once. She knows what's in here, apparently. So I can't imagine that this is such a big deal. And therefore, I would think that when she takes a look at it for 2 or 3 hours, we might have the results we need.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine getting a place where I would want to, unless there was a really compelling financial case made, where I would think that that we would want to spend resources on somebody for that role. Somebody's willing to consult with us free of charge. But again, I think it's always useful to get that price. But that's the sort of view I have.
Okay, I mean, that's where we're at right now, so let's see how it goes.
So the motion, Doug, just to make sure, is to table it with the working group to work with Terry, and then we can come back. And the idea, hopefully, is we'll come back by the beginning of 2020 with revision.
And that's been recorded, so we have it somewhere.
Right, so Terry's willing to consult free of charge. That's great. If not, I just think they're going to have at least further discussion with the board.
Again, before we vote then, quickly, in response to you, John, it seems apparent from what you said that she's willing to consult free of charge a little bit. And that's why I'm saying I can't imagine that when we told her that we decided to quote to this, that she ought to be able to very quickly say, okay, I'll sit down with Tom and Rich and so forth for a couple hours and clarifies Sarah's concerns in these four areas. I can't imagine that's taking very long. If you come back and say, this is taking long, she needs 25 hours at $400 an hour to do this, then we'll have to rethink this, in my opinion. But for now, we can go with where we are and see what happens. I call the question.
All
right. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Well, on the agenda.
We are now moving down to number two.
I'd like to issue a thank you to an unfilled consultant.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So what item are we on? Number six?
We are on item number six.
So we have to go into closed session.
So
I make a motion that we go into closed session. Because that's what we have to do.
We're still on five. We're on five.
But I thought that's what this was.
No.
We have one. Okay. Sorry. Pardon me, we're on number five.
So, Doug, when you were gone.
This is another memo.
This is when you were gone, Doug.
You're busy doing memos.
I think.
I'm going to keep it.
They have the same letterhead, Doug, but they're different content. So, I wrote this memo about, at the end of last month, just about organization, and this is where Josh and I met, and you couldn't unfortunately make it, Doug. So, where Josh and I left it is, let's make sure to update Doug on our conversation, and then answer any questions that you might have, because this kind of sets the stage for the agenda item number six. So the thought was making sure we kind of set what were some goals and what would the position description look like for the executive secretary?
Did I have this before now?
Yeah, so if you've already read it.
No, I apologize that I missed it somewhere in all the paperwork.
Okay.
So I haven't been able to read it.
Okay.
When did I get it?
You got it October 31st.
By email. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was in some stuff you sent us? It came from you.
No, it didn't come from me. It should have come from Jonathan.
It came from Jonathan. Okay, well, I apologize that I missed that in all the papers. So I don't want to hold up the show, so
Doug, what I would point you to, the second page has some high-level goals and priorities that they're put together and proposed, and I would accept the sheriff and server add to this, but I would suggest taking a look at those and seeing what your thoughts are.
I'm sort of remembering that I saw part of this. Let me ask you, you have studied it, and I apologize, I haven't, and you find it to be acceptable.
Yeah, so we, at the last meeting we discussed, generally speaking, these are, I think, the goals, and I think there are perhaps places where I would tweak the language a little bit, and I think it's probably worth our having continuing discussions about how to prioritize within some of these categories. And my impression is that Sarah and I were largely on the same page about that.
I have two questions. First one is, is this something we have to adopt? Is this sort of just a working piece of paper?
It's a living document, but...
Yeah, so we don't have to adopt this formally. So then I don't need to worry that we're setting in stone anything that I don't like, which is good. My second question is to ask Jonathan. We see you today. You've looked at this more than I have. Did you find it appropriate with the goals and operations of the board?
I wasn't privy to the discussion
Yeah, and this is what we discussed in open session.
I mean, you are the executive secretary, so I'd like to know where you think this makes sense for the work you've been doing. And the answer is yes.
You know, there aren't very many, let's say, executive secretary's position is not closely defined. And this is an effort, I think, to lay out some of the expectations for that position. And I think it's a difference.
Good. Well, given that, I feel comfortable to say, okay, thank you, and I will look at this, and if anything strikes me, I'll bring it up to the next meeting.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I thank the two of you for developing this.
Sarah, she deserves credit.
Okay. We get to go to number six.
Is there, when it comes to investment and embracing the agency, and embracing investing in Wisconsin, quick question on that. So it's great to invest in Wisconsin. There's no question. Does this start to create a dual requirement above and beyond, I guess, was it the duty of loyalty, which is embedded, I think, in the investment?
I think that's what actually marks to the question that Scott, I really look forward to having with you about fiduciary responsibility, because I think that we can do that without violating any sort of fiduciary responsibility.
Okay. And I think my perspective, at least, is there's sort of tiers. And the first one is the fiduciary responsibility is without question. So if you're at a point, for example, where promoting interest among Wisconsin companies might both further that fiduciary interest, but also promote this goal of investing in Wisconsin, that's where that sort of goal would come in as sort of a consideration that follows the primary one, if that makes sense.
I think so. My, I guess to use an example, my concern would be something like a China where they've got this this dual role of investing in companies and social good as far as their state-owned enterprises. And I was thinking in that way, those returns aren't always co-equal, as a quick example. And so I just would want to, I'd want to make sure.
I think this is honestly much that's why we wanted to do a good investment policy, because when we look at how we diversify our asset allocation, some assets don't have the same high returns
right. That
maybe other ones do. So I think this goes back to kind of the same thing. Or, when I look at the statute, and when I've talked about fiduciaries, it's a framework, and there's a lot of things that they talk about within that framework that we want to uphold, and so I think it's always making sure that whether it's our asset allocations or for different investments, we're doing that. I don't think our goal into making sure that we invest in Wisconsin is violating fiduciary responsibility. We uphold the framework. That's what we're responsible for doing, and that framework includes a lot of things like economic conditions. I mean, it's pretty clear on what it looks at.
Okay, now can I move we go into closed session?
A second.
All those in favor of closed session say aye.
All right.
Aye. Great, we move into closed session.
Maybe the three of us should go somewhere. Everybody would have you to move.
Well, Doug, you've got a bigger office than I do. Maybe we can just hang out in your office.
Now, do we turn the recording off now?
Yeah.
I'm 15.
I move to end the closed session.
This is starting to follow. I make a motion that we go out of closed session.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're out of closed session. We move back down to our next agenda item, which is the potential action on executive secretary.
And
I would like to make a motion.
This is Doug again. I would like to make a motion that we appoint Tom German to be the executive secretary. At a salary to be discussed by Sarah and people at DOA, and I look forward to working with him.
Starting January 4th?
Starting January 4th.
You second that motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Well, you're stuck with this, you director.
Thank you, I appreciate
that. And the only other thing that we can now say is that we need to start the process of hiring the deputy, and and the board has some ideas about that, and we hope to work with you on filling that position.
Well, we're, again, Jonathan, I guess, I know we're kind of going over on time, but we really appreciate your service for the board and everything that you've done. So we look forward to celebrating you on January 3rd before you leave and seeing all the good things you do post your time here at the BCPL. We're excited to have you on board. Leading the helm and working to fill the deputy and all the other great things that the board does for public schools. And so congratulations. We're looking forward to having you lead the BCPL as the executive secretary.
Thank you very much.
So is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Can we talk about that afterwards? Great.
I didn't hear what you said.
I just wanted to know if it was a public.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more, maybe closer to the time.
It's almost always better to control what's released.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking maybe a little bit closer to the time.
Sure.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think our executive secretary elect can weigh in on that also.
Elect is not the right word, appointee.
What was you in charge of doing that? Your job.
Is there a motion? There's a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
Okay, great. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody.
Did we stop the graduation?